the Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
There was an old saying, I believe in the 1980s, which said you can never be too thin or too rich. Well, maybe there are variations on that people still have today, with over two-fifths of us looking to prioritise their self-improvement goals over their finances in 2024. Key foci being saving money, paying off debts, and budgeting. So how do we do this? How do we actually maybe consider making our money do more and work more? Well, we're delighted to actually welcome a general wonderful soul to the programme to talk about this. He always has sense, which is why he keeps coming back, of course. He's the Dean of the London Academy of Trading. It's Paddy Osborne. How are you, Paddy?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Alex. How are you doing?
Excellent. So this particular finding, no major surprises, really, that people are looking to ensure that with the cost of living crisis still with us, that maybe that whole notion of having a New Year resolution, which involves finance and even basically making more savings, is very much to people's hearts.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's two parts to it. One is saving money. And there's obviously a decent proportion wanting to pay off debts and budget and save money. But on the other side of things, it's the people that do have a little bit of money at their disposal. They want to make the most of it. And so there was one saying 42% would prioritize self-improvement goals on their finances, but a very similar number, 41%, were also saying they were going to consider studying trading, which for me was actually even more interesting because, you know, trading is not for everybody. Some people go, whoa, I'm never going to touch it, which is absolutely fine. And they want to be much more cautious with the money. But there's a really significant proportion of people who are keen on learning more about trading and trying to obviously make a little bit more money for themselves.
And as we know, stocks and shares can go up as well as down. There are lots of Hollywood glamorous notions of dumb money, insider trading, Wall Street and so on. I mean, how does the London Academy of Trading actually provide a kind of basic introduction to people who might just be quite interested in saying, OK, well, I'd like to speculate a certain amount. I acknowledge some of the dangers, but what are the things one must take into account before we actually get into the trading issue?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very important to say that, you know, your investments can go down as well as up. So there's always risk involved in anything, whether investing, trading, or whatever it might be. So that's the first thing. But yeah, so we've tried to keep things very simple in terms of our, you know, programs and courses. We have a 1 week introduction to financial markets and trading. So if you are, you know, you're a beginner and you want to say, I think I might like to learn a little bit more and I'm not sure if it's going to suit me, then that would be the perfect course. It's a 1 week course and you can get to understand the basics really of fundamental analysis. So we do four things: fundamental, technical, psychology, and risk. So fundamental analysis is looking at news, things like the war in Ukraine, interest rates going up and down, etc., and how that affects markets. Then you've got technical analysis, which is looking at charts and the effect of this news on the price and studying and analyzing price movements. You've got psychology, which is vital to understand, you know, our own psychology, how we think, how we behave given certain situations. If we're winning and losing, we behave in a different way. And it's good to understand that so you can then avoid any psychological mistakes. And risk management is making, you know, changing. People say it's gambling. It's not gambling if you manage your risk. If you manage your risk, then you know how much you're risking. If it goes badly, you know, it's an affordable amount. If it goes well, then you make money. So risk management's absolutely key as well. So that's what we look at on the 1 week course. And then we expand all of those things in detail onto our 4 week and 12 week courses.
Markets frequently seem to exist in need of confidence. We hear a great deal about how stock markets can actually have a confident aspect. Rumors can create all manner of challenges from that point of view. Do you feel as though we're getting better as a human race at coping with these shocks and surprises, whether they be natural, whether they be political in nature? Or is it a case of, well, that's life. We're always going to have the unexpected right around the corner.
The second one, basically. I don't think we're getting much better at it. We still have, you know, bubbles and crashes and various things, which is people, it's reflection of people either getting very greedy and going a bit mad or panicking. And there's always going to be more bubbles and crashes. There might be, you know, AI stocks could be, you know, could bubble this year. They could go up and up and up and then pop. So I think the human race is, you know, the same. We react the same, given the same stimulus as we always have. I think these days things are done quicker. We have better technology. We can, you know, buy and sell things much more quickly and more efficiently than we could even 10 years or 100 years ago, certainly. But at the end of the day, our psychological makeup is not changing significantly. And I think we still are affected in the same ways by the same effects of losing and winning money.
And you mentioned, of course, AI. Now, that's a topic which certainly has been at the heart of much of our discussions with the Business Matters program we produce for Siren Radio. Are there areas there where, in terms of AI impacting the way in which stocks and shares are developed? Because inevitably, there are lots of silicon snake oil courses that are put out there to say, our AI can actually ensure you make money without doing anything. Is it still a case of caveat emptor and being very suspicious of courses that actually provide to do everything via artificial intelligence?
Yes, absolutely. I looked into this very briefly just towards the end of last year because I think there was a thing on Jonathan Ross show when he opened some £250 account and it doubled by the end of the show or some hoo-ha like that. And I looked into it and actually I found, looking at reviews and things, there was a vast, vast majority of people just going, don't touch this, it's a scam. And they didn't get their money back. It just disappeared and they lost their money. So be very, very careful before you invest any money into these things. I'm sure AI will have a place to play in finance, and it already does. I still think people, and I hope that most people would want to improve themselves in terms of their own knowledge and their own skills. They don't just sit on your sofa, close the curtains, put the lights down, turn the telly on, you know, and let technology do everything without you moving a muscle. So I think people, you know, want to improve themselves. And this is a hobby that you could get into, understanding more about finance and financial markets and trading, which could potentially earn you money as well. You don't have to risk any money at all. If you're just interested, you can just study it and trade on a demo account. But I think most people, pretty much everyone, is looking to learn, practice on a demo account without real money, and then once they've got a structured process and a consistent profit, then they can start to put some real money behind it.
And what attracted yourself, Paddy, to the field of finance and trading and so on? Was it something you'd always had as a schoolboy? Were you an entrepreneur in the classroom?
It actually started after university because very simply, a friend, I left university, age 21, and a friend said, oh, go in the city because there's lots of money. So I sent my CV around and got a job in the city and ended up in there for 10 years or so, trading warrants and convertible bonds, which was a very fun market to be in. Then I went off to work for a company, software company, providing software and data for the financial industry. But I've always had an interest in trading since the beginning of that time. And I've now been trading, my own account for well over 15, 20 years now. And all of our tutors do as well. So we're all traders that teach, not teachers that teach, which I think is very important.
Indeed so. Finally, how can people actually follow and indeed get in contact with the London Academy of Trading to look at some of the courses we've been talking about today?
Well, lat.london is our website. Just search London Academy of Trading. We'll pop up, of course. And all the information's there, and you can just inquire and get more information, have a chat with us to see more information, answer your questions, and also you can pop in and see us at our trading floor. So we're one of the rare academies that still has a full-time trading floor, and if you want to study on the trading floor, then you can, part-time, full-time, absolutely up to you, very flexible.
Paddy Osborne, Dean of the London Academy of Trading, huge thanks as ever, and happy 2024.
Thank you very much, same to you. Take care. Cheers.
Well, thanks to Paddy Osborne, of course, the Dean of the London College of Trading. And we're keeping the financial theme going as far as this particular feature is concerned, because we're delighted to welcome back for a return to the Author of the Week feature, a young lady who was with us not too long ago, but it was actually August the 4th, 2023. She's an ace financial guru. She's a soul representative of Calgary, basically. She does so many wonderful things. She's a Canadian author, of course. Kaylee Boisvert. How are you, Kaylee?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Well, always great to hear from you. And again, lots of sage advice that we had on your last production, where we talked obviously about finances and other issues relating to that. So how has it been going in the last few months? Because, of course, we have had the release of the much anticipated and heralded children's book that you actually put together for the whole piece of the whole thing. The world has now been granted the sheer joy of not only make money your thing, but also money-wise, Mabel's bursting bank is actually out there.
Yes. Yeah, it's exciting. It's nice to have the two out now because it just feels like they're a nice pair, right? So Make Money Your Thing is great for the adults. And Money-Wise Mabel's Bursting Bank, great for people with kids. So it's if you're feeling like new year, fresh start, and want to do some more with your financial literacy, then, you know, it's the pair. You can do it with your kids too, little kids as well. So it's been great. I love hearing the feedback from the kids' book. When parents are actually reading it to children and getting to hear the children, like what they're saying, because it's one thing, I don't need parent feedback, right? They're not the audience. I want to know what the kids think of it, because they're very tough critics. And so I've gotten such amazing feedback. It's like the cutest thing in the world, just hearing that after reading it, kids are excited to save up for certain things. So one said her son's now saving up for snorkeling gear. One said her daughter's saving up for an iPad. And the one sent me pictures, like she reads it. Her daughter wants to read it every night and she's like holding it in bed. It was so cute. So I love getting that feedback and hearing that from people. And again, I wrote this book just as this idea of like, you know, as a financial professional, what is my biggest piece of advice? And it's always start early, like as early as possible with this money stuff. And, you know, how early is that? Well, kids, why don't we start these conversations with children so we can put them on the right path going forward, that they continue to be curious and want to know more. And so money isn't this, you know, topic that we avoid, or, you know, it's full of like, yeah, like shame, fear, all those like very negative emotions often accompany money for people, but it doesn't have to be that way. So let's start early in a really positive light. And that's what I was really hoping to achieve with Money-Wise Mabel's Bursting Bank. So it's been great. I love hearing the feedback.
As you can see, it's just so profound that for the theater of the mind, which radio is, it's just emerged around us from that point of view. You can check out some of the images on Facebook with respect to the system within that. Let's just talk a little bit about that, though, because, of course, it starts off with when Mabel pulls her piggyback out from under the bed. It's stuffed. She can't fit one more coin inside. Piggy is bursting. And of course, it goes on to ask the question, what should Mabel do with all that money? Should it go on candy, toys, games? It's really a case of making those financial decisions. Because as you say, here we are in January. It's the start of the year. People will obviously have lots of New Year's resolutions and so on. We talked, as I say, with the Dean of the London College of Trading from that point of view. Some people will like to make want to make their money work for them. Some people would obviously want to be saying, well, we'll have a treat and so on and so forth. Is that at the heart of what you were trying to do with respect to this particular text?
Yeah, like, money is so much like deeper than just money and numbers, I think. And I, from being in the industry this long and working with so many different people, I think that really started to show for me. And so I think, you know, the behaviors we have around money, it's often just like a symptom of something else. So, you know, one of the biggest things people have with money is this idea of like spending, and there's this big sort of like instant gratification and this emotional tie to spending, like when people are maybe in a not feeling great or had a bad day, this like idea of retail therapy, things like that. Like when we're feeling very guilty about how we're using our money, there's a lot of that out there. And so I think, yeah, starting as early as thinking with children, you're right. There's a decision to be made when it comes to money. We have to make money decisions every single day when we grow up as adults. So as kids, yes, the conversation, we can start it with something as easy as like understanding that instant gratification of like, yeah, you can buy, you know, some little things right now and blow all your money on something like that. Or you can save up for something bigger, and it won't be an instant gratification. It might take time. It might take a long time, but the reward feels really good, because when you grow up, these money goals and financial goals, some of them are quite a ways away. When you're saving up for a down payment on a home, or you're saving up for your retirement, those are long ways away. So you have to be really patient. So I think it's like starting kids on that path of remembering, you know, what it's like that you have to save up for something because kids don't have access to credit cards and things like that. So there's a lot to be said of like what we as adults can, you know, do with that information too, that we've moved to this society, I think, of that exact, like that instant gratification, need it right now, pay for it later. I think that's one of the biggest like negatives that's going on right now with money and the hardest thing for people to deal with. And I don't know the answer to it, but I know there's very much an emotional piece, and we do have to work on that instant gratification and saving up for goals and things like that and being very patient.
I appreciate the notion that you've spoken of there, which is very much related to education and how actually it is about education that people have this particular view of money. Some people actually say, oh, it's the root of all evil and so on. Of course, the full quote is, it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. But it is one of those areas where getting over those challenges and actually beginning to deal with financial literacy is such an important aspect. And probably it's a case of it's never too soon to start learning about the importance of these things.
Absolutely not. Like, I think anyone can agree later on in life that they say the things like, I wish I started earlier. I wish I knew these things. And then we start to like blame, right? Like, why didn't I start earlier? Well, I didn't learn it in school. My parents weren't talking to me enough about this stuff. So it makes sense that we're kind of angry that along the way we didn't get enough financial literacy. But there's no time like the present. Like you said, like we can start now. That's the best thing we can do. We don't have control over the past. We can't change that. And your parents and the people around you were doing the best they could, right? No one was trying to secretly conceal money information from you. I think, you know, it's generations of they didn't learn a lot of it either. They didn't feel equipped to teach their children about money and whatnot. So it's that financial literacy piece is so valuable, so important. And just really be easy on yourself and take it slow and gradual, knowing that you're learning some of these concepts for the first time, and that's okay. And sometimes that feels weird when you're later on in life that you're learning something new and you like it feels awkward or that you should already know it or something like that. But that's, you know, again, it's not the case, and that's not the point. Like, the point is just to get to know a little bit more, feel more comfortable, so you can go from that like avoidance and overwhelm to wanting to know more, engage, feel confident, feel empowered.
So, in terms of the way this whole process is coming together, how is the Boisvert plan coming? I mean, from obviously from your base in Calgary with your 1-year-old child and your family and so on, and areas from that point of view, are things on track? Are you looking forward to 2024 with optimism? Is it a case of, well, certain optimism, certain trepidation? How do you actually see, let's say, the next 12 months?
Do you mean like to like an economy way or like me? Okay. Oh, it's tough. Like, I wish we had you know, psychic capabilities as financial professionals. I wish I had those. But I don't. And so we have to just always go back to the basics of what we do know. So you know, we don't know what's going to happen because we were dealing with a lot of negative factors last year as well, but we saw, you know, quite the rally at some point too in certain stock markets around the world. So if you went kind of with that negativity, you might have been on the sidelines and missed out on that rebound that you were sort of waiting for after 2022, where everything was really down a lot. So I think going forward, like I would hope, kind of the intention people have is just try to keep it simple and remember that markets can be very chaotic, very much like a roller coaster in the economy, right? Lots of up and downs. There's a lot of negativity, and negativity sells, right? So news is always going to be kind of geared more towards the negativity, unfortunately, or has been. So just kind of sticking with the premise of, you know, what can I control? You know, how can I keep this simple? Because keeping it simple gets us continuing to stay engaged and be a part of it and taking steps and actions. The minute it becomes too complicated, we're like, well, too much. I don't have time for this. So I think that's my best piece of advice. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. There's going to be opinions on both sides. We can probably find a lot to support that things will be great, and we could probably find a lot to support that it's, you know, everything's going terrible and nothing is gonna be right or something like that. So we have to decide, well, what can I control? How can I keep it simple so I take actions and do the things that I can do? So I think for people like with that in mind, some of the biggest things you can do that are going to help you build wealth is being mindful of expenses and spending. We have gone through a period of really high inflation and things have gotten quite expensive. And that's what we were kind of experiencing over the last few years. And people are really feeling the crunch from that. So I think, you know, what can you do about that? Well, you can look through things and, you know, take a good look at it and see, is there anything I can change? Is there anything I want to change? Like for me, I look at my expenses and I go, wow, I spent far more than I realized and wanted to on eating takeout. So, you know, my goal for 2024 was eat less takeout, like make more meals at home. And I'm being intentional about doing that because I did some work to reflect and see, okay, how much was I spending? So I actually went through the numbers and that helped me go, oh, I want to change this. I want to make a change here. And it's in my control to do that. So that's what I would suggest people to focus on. If you're investing, like, of course, investing is a great way to build wealth. And if you're feeling a bit uncertain of timing of like, is it right to invest now? Should I wait and see if the markets are going to go down? Things like that. Well, how about if you just invest gradually along the way? So let's say you're paid on the 1st and the 15th. Well, maybe it's, you know, on those pay periods, you have a certain amount of money added to your investments and it's just ongoing. It's happening. You don't really think about it. So that's a really good idea as well, taking you into the new year again. So focusing on what you can control, keeping it simple. So something like that is just automating your investing where you don't have to put a lot of thought into it. So that's what I would say for people, because we don't know. Like I could give some predictions based on, you know, what has happened and what I think or what I want to believe, but they're going to be my opinions. And so they're probably, I don't know. And then you're going to, if I say something completely wrong, everyone's going to come back after me and be like, you weren't right about that. So we have to go back to the basics of what we do know. And it's just, you know, what are the keys to building wealth? It's spending less than you earn and investing to help grow and compound your wealth.
Yeah, Kaylee, don't worry about saying something wrong. I mean, politicians do it all the time. They become presidents of the United States. It happens. So on that basis alone, you know, we've got a whole range of other aspects to go through. One of the key things, of course, that you have brought to bear with respect to your website, your podcast and so on, is this whole connection between financial health and indeed wellness in general. And the Wealth and Wellness podcast, of course, was something which was produced 96 episodes, of course, available, including things such as eliminating chronic stress to transform your health and wellness. Are there times where you sort of are looking to update that? Is it something which is going to be something which you might revisit in 2024? Or is it a case of, no, I've said all I need to say on my podcasts. They will be fixed in tablets of stone forevermore until an artificial intelligence decides to provide a Kaylee avatar.
That would be nice. Yeah, I think I paused it after I had my son because I'm like, something has to give as a business owner and a single mom. So I think there's always more to be said. It's crazy. Like every day things are changing and it's, you know, I'm getting ideas of like, oh, you know, based on what's going on in the economy or what people are saying, you know, this is really relevant. And so I probably could make a podcast or something to talk every day, but I think I'm just trying to figure out like, what is that and where is my energy best spent? Because as you comment on the wellness piece, it's just, you know, we also have to like live a wealthy life means having that balance and making sure we give enough time for joy and the things that we enjoy doing. So yeah, I'm trying to, I think 2024, I'm coming into it with like, I don't know. Like I'm still waiting for the answer of like, where should I put the energy? And so I'm still like, I haven't got the answer yet. I like to meditate on it and put it out there and see what answer comes to me, but it hasn't come yet. So I'm still just, you know, talking about the books, which are very important to me and seeing, yeah, what is the next best thing that, you know, is relevant that's going to get people's attention? Cause it just feels like it is changing so fast. You know, is it podcasts? Like where are people going to now? And people have so little time. They're busy with their lives.
Well, one of the things since we last spoke, of course, which has become very much rooted in discussions with authors almost on a daily, let alone annual, weekly basis, is the question of artificial intelligence and ChatGPTs and areas with respect to that, to the extent that we now tend to put a disclaimer and say that actually, as far as I'm aware, neither Kayleigh nor myself have actually been replaced by ChatGPT. We are actually real live human beings communicating on this podcast. But allowing from that perspective, does that fill you with trepidation? Are you concerned a bit about the way in which AI can effectively, you know, take the words that you're saying, mix them up, and produce a whole new AI-generated Kayleigh Boisvert for the world? Or is that something where you think, well, human beings have always been concerned? There are those people who were panicking when the typewriter was introduced as a way of actually replacing the quill pen and such like.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like on the cusp of being a millennial. I'm one of the older millennials. So I think for me, it was exciting. Like when I found out about like the ChatGPT and stuff, I was telling my daughter all about it because she's 9. And I'm like, what is this going to even mean for school? Like, how are they going to give them assignments like we had where it was like, write a research paper on a topic or something like that? Like, I'm just so curious to see what will that look like when they have this tool to essentially write it for them. And it's hard to see, well, have they written it or have, you know, has it been someone else? But I find it so valuable because I don't know if this is a real thing. Women talk about this as like baby brain, like you have children and you feel like your brain is not as sharp afterwards and that maybe it never comes back. So it's been a very good tool for me when I have these random thoughts. I just put them into ChatGPT and help it, like it helps me make sense of my thoughts and gives it some sort of like formatting. I'm like, ah, that's really good words, because I'm like, my word recall lately is just terrible. So I don't know. I found it as an amazing supportive tool. And I think if it's used that way, it can and help. Like you said, like when these technologies come in, they can make things even better. But I don't know, with the way it's going and how well it does it, maybe it's not even helping us. You're right. Maybe it's completely replacing us. So, I mean, we don't want that to happen. But I think it's a very interesting topic for authors and for people who've written books, because there's going to be full books written now by AI, and you're like, I don't know, are people going to read it? Probably. Like, are we being replaced? Do authors have to find a new way to stay relevant? Maybe.
You have given birth to obviously two Generation Alpha individuals. Generation Alpha is apparently used for people born after 2010 okay. to 2025. That's Generation Alpha. Do you think Generation Alpha can actually look forward to a more exciting, dynamic world than the millennials? Or, and indeed, let's face it, some of those Generation X's, Generation Y's, even baby boomers, who knows, that kind of still hang around in the whole place? Or do you feel that actually there are going to be challenges? I mean, we talked about AI. What about, obviously, travel to Mars, travel to the moon, travel to other areas in the solar system and so on, that the planet Earth may not be the sole domain for business operatives in the 21st century.
I know. We were just, me and my daughter were at a movie. It was, and like there was a little short at the beginning, and it was like with the minions, and the guy was put on the moon and he was trying to figure out how to get back to Earth. And so I leaned over to my daughter and I was like, are you going to go to the moon? Because she's 9. I'm like, I feel like that's probably going to be a destination. And she's like, no. So that's her answer on it. I don't know. I think it's like, it's too much. I feel like I'm now in the generation that feels like I'm too old to know or be able to keep up, which is funny. It's like moving so fast that we're like, ooh. I don't know. I think it's all like amazing and interesting, and it's making things easier. So as things get easier, we can do more. And I love efficiency. By all means, I'm all about efficiency. So I think it's neat to see how we can be more efficient, and when we're more efficient, how we can get more things done and what that looks like.
As we said, you're an ace author, podcaster, Make Money Your Thing is still out there. It's a part of a double whammy, of course, with the wonderful line of Marvelous Mabel, etc. How do you relax? What is the, do you ever sort of relax? Is it a case of, no, I've always got something that's actually being bubbling, that's sorting through, or there's a crisis to be sorted through with my children and so on? Or are there moments where you actually do have downtime to say, okay, this is it, I'm going to just have a kind of complete period of time just for myself?
Yes. Yeah, going into 2024, definitely wanting more of that and being intentional of scheduling time for that. Because yes, when you're busy with life, you kind of put yourself on the back burner, especially as moms. I think we do that often. And it becomes like, oh, I don't have time for a doctor's appointment, or I don't have time to go to the dentist. And you're like, well, no, that stuff has to be the priority and other things have to come after. So that's really important. I love reading books. Like I will be reading a book any chance I get. And the great thing about that as my sort of downtime hobby is like, yeah, I can squeeze in 5 to 10 minutes and feel, you know, nice that I've gotten some of that done. And yeah, I've been like flying through books over the holidays. So that to me is like the best part is books. You could like lock me in a library or a bookstore and I'd be happy for a long time.
Well, I was going to say, are you a physical book reader? Do you prefer the tangibility of actually holding a book in your hands? Or are you somebody who prefers the electronic system?
I do prefer it in my hands, but now that I have my little guy, he's 1.5 and he's crazy. I can't hold like things like books in my hands because he will rip it out and he will rip out pages, which is not respectful to books. So I do just actually read them on my phone on the app there, which people think is crazy reading off my phone. But I'm like, it's so easy and convenient and he doesn't take my phone from me. So it's the only way I can get any reading done.
And in terms of that whole sequence, just out of interest, as the author, how would you prefer people to read your books? Would you like them to have the physical copies or would you like them to read them on Kindle or equivalent app?
I find like Kindle is nice and convenient because it's with you wherever you are usually. Like you can have it all loaded on a lot of devices. But I think the physical is good too. Like people kind of like having that element where they can like maybe highlight or like tab things or yeah, like sort of give themselves places to where they, I personally find though the ebook more convenient. And I think right now it's like drastically less expensive than the paper copy of my book. Mm. So there's a little bit of a promo on the ebook. So I'm like, go for the ebook. It's dirt cheap. What else? Oh, and I have an audiobook. It's coming out in the next couple of months. So I know people love listening to audiobooks too. I've always been a big fan of those. So it's quite the process recording your own audiobook, but that will be out in 2024.
Which was the other one I was going to mention, of course, the onset of audiobooks and the ways in which that also is a way of obviously digesting information and so on. Is that something which, again, the way that technology can actually provide for us to actually do this, the author's word can actually be spread a lot more than, shall we say, the days of Charles Dickens when he would actually go from country to country, city to city, actually doing readings from A Christmas Carol and other such classics?
That's so fun, though, too, like getting to be someone at those events, right? I don't know if you're a big book fan. It's like that's like a celebrity you get to see. I think, yeah, like I would love the AI to have replaced me in reading because I was in this like conundrum of, you know, should I get someone else to read it, like the professionals you can hire to read it, or do I read it myself? And I was like, oh, I always gravitate towards books that are read by the author themselves. I feel like it kind of just puts a little bit more of like, it feels like it is them and how they deliver it and everything feels different. So I do always myself get audiobooks when it's the author reading it. So knowing that, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to read it. But like, let me tell you, it's like a grueling process. And it took a very long time, like longer than I thought. And I was just actually back in the studio for some edits this week and we hadn't done, like we had kind of finished everything and there was a big gap and then I was back for some edits and he was like, oh, you'll probably have to redo the whole paragraph. It was usually just a sentence or two and then he's like, no, you're gonna have to do the whole paragraph here because it sounds a bit croaky or something. My voice was getting weird. And so I'm like, oh, the whole paragraph. And then I'm like, imagine I had to do the whole thing again. And like that task was like, oh, I wouldn't. I'd probably be like, nope, get someone else to do it. So yes, if AI could replace me and sound like me, I would probably opt for the AI. I think that would be a nice invention. Yes.
Wow, Kaylee, a huge admission there in terms of ways in which AI can actually be a, it could never replace you. It might succeed you. It can never replace you, Kaylee. There can only be one individual Kaylee Boivin. Let's talk confidence, because an awful lot of financial work tends to operate on confidence, both in the international markets and arguably on the micro scale of actually having confidence that there will be a tomorrow, that actually there are things that we can actually have confidence in and so on. If somebody's listening to this particular discussion and they're thinking, well, it's all well and good if you're Kaylee Boivin and you've produced all these things and all of that sort of bits and pieces, but I'm just having to sort of try and make ends meet here. What advice would you give them? Is it take those baby steps, take those small steps at a time and actually don't try to literally become a multi-million award-winning financial trader overnight?
Yeah, you're right about that. I like that. You're right. Baby steps are so important because I think there's an element of overwhelm already with money. And then there's lots of money books out there, which is fabulous. And I'm happy that there is. Again, we need this financial literacy. But it's almost like finding the right one for where you're at, because some of the books are going to like tell you to start, you know, becoming this real estate mogul, buying a whole bunch of properties and renting them out. And that's not realistic, I would say, for the majority of the population. Because if the majority of the population is doing that, we have another problem, right? Like, how is everyone going to be landlords and rent out? Then you run out of rent. Like, it doesn't make sense. So we can't all, you know, go on that path. So there's certain books that are going to touch on certain topics and maybe make sure when you're going into one of those that that's something you're ready for and it is aligned with where you're at. Because if you're reading something that it's sort of too big or feels too overwhelming, you're going to shut down. And the biggest piece we want to see as financial people, like what I would urge people to do, and it's always about taking action. Like, I'm like, okay, all you have to do is this, this, and this, and this. Like, do it. Like, I can't necessarily force them to do some of these things, right? I need some sort of teamwork, give and take, right? So it gets us to a point where we're not going to take action, right? When we're overwhelmed, we're stressed, you go into that freeze mode, usually is the common response, and you don't do anything. And that's the biggest, you know, thing you could do in the opposite like direction of what we're trying to achieve. Like, by doing nothing, that's kind of the most harm you can do for your money. So what I would suggest, you're right, is baby steps, taking it gradually, not being too hard on yourself. Think of it too as like a season. Like, I was having this conversation with someone yesterday and she just felt so overwhelmed. She's like, I haven't been able to contribute to my, you know, kids' education fund and my retirement fund this year, and I feel really guilty and I don't know what I should be doing and da da da. And we were kind of having the conversation, and she's a single mom, and you know, her mortgage was increasing because interest rates have gone up. And so it's just acknowledging that, like, you're in this really challenging season right now, and it's okay. Like, you don't have to do those things right now. If the money isn't there, the money's not there. And you don't want to like scale back on things like her son's hockey or something like that, because that's very important to them. And that is a goal and a priority. So it was just like, okay, that is what it is. And, you know, this season, you know, this time frame, you're not able to do it, but that could change. Like, she talked about opportunities coming up in her company of it might, you know, go public, and she has these stock options and they could be vesting and this is how much they'd be worth. So it's just that reminder of thinking like, what you're in right now is not permanent. It's not that this is now decided and forever. It could just be that this is where you're at, and it's a tough time for a lot of people right now. So decide that, okay, there still can be optimism. There still can be possibilities. You can still have great money results. Like, growing up, I talk about in my book, we were very poor. We had like very little money. My mom never had savings in the bank. Like, it was really, we struggled to get by. And now, where is my mom? Well, she is retired. She got to retire earlier than probably a lot of people. Her house is paid off. She has a pension that she has as her retirement income. It's amazing. And like, that wasn't the case that when we were young, and it was really hard and in those early years. So I think you're right, for people to just acknowledge that we go through these times in life where we have to acknowledge that maybe sometimes we can't be doing a lot. And that's okay too. It's managing our mindset through those times to get through that. So on the other side of it, when those opportunities do start coming up and things start changing, that you're ready to do those things and take the steps. So if you're feeling like you're in that place and there's not much you can do, well, some of the things you can do is just have a really good awareness of where you stand with your finances. So if you're in debt and you want to work on getting rid of that debt, really take an inventory of like, what is my debt? You know, when do I want to have it paid off by? What are some steps that I will gradually take or eventually take, or what can I start doing now? Things like that. So just take it like one step at a time, really break it down, keep it simple, do a little things, and every action does lead to, you know, it compounds and it works in your favor. So even by saying, I'm just going to work on my financial literacy right now, I don't have a lot of extra money to put away or save or invest, but when I do, that way I will be ready. I won't feel like I need to put a lot of time in at that point in time. So then just start reading some money books, start reading some articles about investing and things like that. So you're right, baby steps is key.
Let's return back to books. Are there any particular genres that you like? Are there any particular authors that you like? Or is it a case of no, if it's not about finance, I'm not interested?
Oh, I love like fiction books. So, and now I've been like pulled into the world of book talk. Are you familiar? Like where it's everyone's, talking about what books they read. So I love going on there and seeing what are like the popular books. It's terrible, but they're really good books. I feel like they're doing the work for me with hearing their reviews and things like that. So I've read like any book I've kind of pulled from that. I've really enjoyed. And it's fun because it's gotten me into like other genres that I would never have read. So I did read some like fantasy and things like that because I was hearing so much about Fourth Wing and I loved it. So I'm like, I'm glad I'm exposing myself to these other genres. But yes, I love reading money books because that feels very much like business in what I do. But then for myself and for fun, I read fiction.
And are there any particular musical genres or styles that you like as well? It's a case of before I can actually start focusing myself up on doing another read through for my podcast or indeed my talking book, I need to actually listen to this. Or is it just a case of with two young children, you're constantly on the wheels of the bus go round and round?
Those songs are always in my head. I'm always singing like Miss Rachel's song. She's like a big YouTube one for kids, which is it like in my head when I'm sleeping and stuff. It's very unhealthy. I'm like, I can't wait till we get out of this stage because I don't want to hear that over and over again in my head. But you're right, I don't have a lot of time. So I have taken a really good liking to Disney music because that's what kids like too. And I'm like, this is good stuff. It gets you. It's very positive. It's very like high vibe and yeah, like gets you feeling good. But when it's my choice, I like things like Beyonce, Taylor Swift, very like empowering women type music makes me feel good. You're right. It's a good kind of pump up for the day or when you are starting to write, it kind of gets you in that mode of like, yeah, I can do this.
So, favorite Beyonce song or favorite Taylor Swift nut song? What would you like?
Beyonce, it's that like who run the world girls.
And Taylor Swift?
Me too. I love all of, I don't know. I love so many of her songs. I think that's why she's so successful. I'm like, I can't even put a favorite when I hear a Taylor Swift song. I'm like, that's a great song. She has mastered music. I'm like, how do you have like that many hit singles? I don't know. I love them all.
Well, she probably took advice from your writing, Kaylee. She just hasn't admitted it as yet. It's just obviously going to be out there. She's the important thing. Okay, let's begin to wrap up now. Of course, the website remains kayleebwaver.com. Is that a good go-to starting off point for people who have been listening to this who say, we want to find out more about Kaylee Boisvert, Boisvert?
Yeah, absolutely. Go to the website. It has links to some blog posts I've had on there, a little bit of, yeah, who I am, my story, and links to the books and things like that.
Okay. And any holiday plans this year? I mean, we'll be featuring the thoughts of travel writer Lisa Minot on terms of how it's important to actually get a regular blast of sunshine, etc. Is it a case of no, I'll be staying in Calgary as ever because after all, we've got a great stampede. Why should I leave?
No, of course not. We're in the winter. It's the worst part of Calgary. I'm going to Disneyland next week. I love Disney. So it's not like a vacation. I feel like it's like go, go, go the whole time, but so fun.
Excellent. Okay. Well, two final questions that we've reached, which we delivered via Jessica Bursis, I think, on your debut of the production. Fairly straightforward. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you, Kaylee?
Oh yeah, it's fun. A lot of questions that I'm like, oh, this is different. Yes.
Well, again, the next question is, can we prevail upon you to return? Will you be kind enough to come back for another podcast in the not too distant future?
Absolutely. If your audience likes this stuff, let's talk about money. I could talk about money all day.
Like a perfect night to dress up like hipsters and make fun of our exes. It feels like a perfect night for breakfast at midnight to fall in love with strangers. Yeah, we're happy, free, confused, and lonely at the same time. It's miserable and magical. Deadlines. It's
So the average January temperature in the Canary Islands, currently 21 degrees centigrade. In mainland Spain, 16 degrees centigrade. In Portugal, also 16. And in Turkey, oh, not so good, 15. Likewise, Greece, also 15. Average temperature, of course, in the UK, 4 degrees centigrade. Not good if you prefer your temperatures to be slightly warmer. And indeed, if you'd like to have more daylight. So let's talk a bit more about these destinations and places that perhaps could actually take away that seasonally affected disorder with the awesome travel writer extraordinaire. It's Lisa Minot. How are you, Lisa?
Hi there. Good, thank you.
Always great to connect with your good self. Are you a fan of the sun, Lisa? Or is it a case of no? Personally, I prefer to go to Iceland.
Oh, no, very definitely a fan of the sun. There's nothing I like more than the feeling of the warmth on my skin and those fabulous clear blue skies, neither of which we've seen very much of here in the UK recently. And obviously, you know, this is something that is going to be addressed by tomorrow, which is Sunshine Saturday. It's the busiest day of the year for Brits to start booking their summer holidays. Totally understandable. You see, there's new research out this week from Jet2 Holidays that says that more than half of us feel that our mood really worsens during the winter months, you know. And I think what happens is just after Christmas, you know, we've done the festivities, we've eaten the last of the turkey sandwiches, we're looking at a very long January, and we're trying to look at something that's going to help us boost our mood and something to be look forward to. And what more could you do than get book a holiday?
I was a little surprised to see that 44% of those surveyed would actually support the removal of daylight saving. Now, surely that notion of spring forward and fall back is one of the ways of knowing when you should go into hibernation for the winter in October, and then, of course, come out of our hibernation and lose that hour in the spring.
Yeah, we've had this perennial argument for years, haven't we? I mean, there is pros and cons to it. But I think what we were looking at now in terms of why people want to start booking their holidays is because you're right, as you've just said, you know, we're looking at about 8 hours of daylight at the moment here in the UK. And it's daylight. It's not sunshine. You know, it's pretty grey out there. Whereas if you compare that to the lights of the Canary Islands, they've got 11 hours of daylight at the moment in the Canary Islands. And most of that is sunshine. So it's definitely something that I think people look forward to. Winter holidays, winter sun holidays, a sort of fly and flop to somewhere just to warm your bones a bit, is definitely something I think a lot of people are considering. And then, of course, people looking towards the summer and booking their main summer holiday.
Love that concept, fly and flop. Extraordinary. But of course, the notion of as long as you've got your sunscreen, making sure you're catching up on your vitamin D manufacture, and of course, some serotonin, some feel-good chemicals from that point of view, all very good and all very important, of course, to our sense of well-being as human beings.
That's right, yes. And that's exactly what you're getting out of that sunshine holiday, that boost in serotonin, the vitamin D being built up again. I mean, funny enough, during the second pandemic lockdown, I was diagnosed with my doctor as actually having a severe vitamin D deficiency. And that was mainly from spending those 4 months, you know, cooped up in a home office, not actually getting out that much in those winter months. So it really is very important for our health, both mentally and physically, that we get that sunshine. So now's the time to start booking, I think.
We looked at five, of course, of the popular destinations, the Canary Islands, Spain, Portugal, Turkey and Greece. They all have their charms. They all have attractions. Are there any that effectively you say, well, obviously it's got to be the Canary Islands because that's 21 degrees centigrade as opposed to Greece's 6 degrees lower at 15?
I mean, I think it's horses for courses, and it's different times of year you're going to want to do different things. There's no doubt that I think a lot of us are looking at those shoulder seasons, so like the spring and the autumn, as great places to get away, with temperatures getting quite hot in the summer. Some people love that really sort of sizzling hot temperatures. But for those who prefer just lovely mild conditions, definitely I would say that going away in those, or, you know, shoulder seasons are going to be saving you money. It's going to be a lot less crowded as well. So it's definitely worth looking at that if you are not tied to those school summer holidays. But that's also why this is the time of year that a lot of families start looking at booking a holiday, because they are tied to particular dates. There's lots of offers being, you know, the big tour operators, the likes of Jet2, they have got these offers on at the moment, the free child place holidays, low deposits. So, and a possibility that you can sort of pay over a certain number of months. Because for those families, it is going to be important to lock something in that they're going to be able to, you know, find decent flight prices. And obviously, the earlier you book, you know, the flight price is going to cheap, but also the flight time is going to get a lot better as well. You get much more choice in terms of not having to get up in the middle of the night with kids, which is never pleasant. And making sure that you've got the right accommodation as well. You know, the hotel with the best kids facilities, the best kids pool or water slide park. So the earlier you book, the more choice you're going to get for something like that. For the rest of us, as I say, just picking something throughout the year and being able to just jet away and get some of that sunshine, I think is really important, whatever time of year it is.
I see that in July, of course, the UK reverses the trend and actually has more daylight hours. In fact, two more than the Canary Islands, mainland Spain, Portugal, and certainly Greece. So there is that line of things to be talking about. But what about people who would take it to extremes, Lisa, and say, look, I've had enough of this. I'm off to the Southern Hemisphere for the winter, and I'll come back to the Northern Hemisphere when it comes back to the summer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the long stay holidays are something that has become, you know, ever more of a trend for obviously people who are retired and perhaps don't have to, you know, get back into work, or actually people who are now working remotely. Lots of people are looking at those long stay holidays where they can actually, you know, in terms of for some older people, you know, the idea that you can turn everything off at home, you're not paying electricity, you're not, you know, having to heat the house, and then jetting away on holiday. There's been some great deals for the Canary Islands and the likes of Egypt as well. And Morocco is another one. So Jet2, they're now flying to Morocco, another great one. So North African destination. So you've got this, you know, romantic exotism of the likes of Marrakesh, but then also some really lovely beach resorts. Agadir has got really wonderful beach resorts, lovely modern hotels, big plots of land there on beautiful palm trees, and something that is, you know, something you can actually go and enjoy the holiday from really very early spring all the way to late autumn.
Clearly, we're talking about Jet2 and flight very much comes into that. But what about the listener who might be saying, yeah, I prefer more slow travel. I might get a sort of a short hot flight and then actually take a train somewhere. Would you say that might be worth considering?
I mean, I think that's definitely something that a lot of people are thinking of doing, and actually making the journey part of the experience, part of the holiday. Train travel in Europe is much, much more of a pleasant experience than it is here in the UK. As all I seem to have talked about for the last 2 weeks is train travel chaos. But obviously getting a train in Europe is a very different prospect, and there's some really good new routes being planned at the moment. There's a route from Austria to Italy that's being planned, new route. So there's lots of ways to actually get about, or even once you've done your fly into holiday, then start exploring where you can travel by train once you've got there, and see if you can then go and explore a little bit further afield once you're actually on your holiday.
Fascinating as ever. Where can people find out further details about the work that Jet2 have put together and indeed some of the holidays we've spoken about so far?
Well, for all the inspiration, why don't you go to jet2holidays.com?
And following yourself, Lisa, what's the best way to follow the adventures of Lisa Minot, top travel writer?
Of course. So my column appears in the paper, in the Sun, every Saturday and every Sunday. And I'm on all your social medias as well if you want to follow my adventures. My next trip is to Miami for the launch of the new Icon of the Seas cruise ship, the biggest cruise ship in the world.
Fantastic, Lisa. We know that they'll be pleased to have you there, which is very important. As ever, a delight. Keep on keeping on. And if we haven't said it before, which I don't think we have, Happy New Year.
And a Happy New Year to you too and all your readers, all your listeners, sorry.
Remember those walls I built? Well, baby, they're tumbling down. And they didn't even put up a fight. They didn't even make the sound. I found a way to let you in, but I never really had a doubt. Standing in the light of your halo, I got my angel now. It's like I've been awakened.